There are three specific times that you can see a significant personality change in yourself or your partner. Most people are blindsided when this happens, but not you, if you stick around for this episode. Welcome to the Pro Se Divorce Podcast, where you can learn how to turn mediocre mediations into major successes. My name is Tom Davis, and I'm a certified professional divorce mediator in Denver, Colorado. I've helped thousands of clients over the past two decades reach success rates and outcomes that are significantly higher than what is typical. In each episode, I will share valuable insights, practical skills, and tools you can utilize right away to improve your mediation outcomes. And I'll serve as your guide through the potentially confusing process of divorce. Better days are coming, starting now. There are three interesting parts to this phenomenon. First, what is the personality change or changes? And then what are the three times? And then the third big part is how this will affect you and what you can do about it. So let's start with what is the personality change? What does that mean? And I'm going to refer to this phenomenon as something that you can also experience, but I'm going to refer to it as basically, you know, that you're experiencing this from your partner. So you may see personality changes in your partner, your husband, your wife, your partner that you don't expect. But I also want you to keep in mind that you're not immune to these kind of phenomenon and that you may be the one who's experiencing sudden and unexpected personality changes as a result of going through the divorce. Your partner begins behaving differently than is normal. So they may have changes in their attitude towards you or the children that seem to come out of the blue. They may deviate on goals that used to be important to both of you. Maybe that's, you know, preparing for college or something else, but goals that you've had suddenly seem to be not as important to them. Your partner may deviate on values that you used to share. They may seem arbitrarily disagreeable, contrary, or dismissive. And they don't seem to recognize the impacts their behavior might be having on you or the children, even after it's pointed out. So what all this means is that they are not behaving in a way that you're accustomed to. And another facet of this is that even when it's pointed out, they don't say, oh, wait a minute, you're right. Here's why that might be happening. They either blow it off or quickly rationalize it or don't even address it. That means there's an underlying cause that is driving this, and that is a major clue for you. So this is the change we're talking about, and it can be pretty disconcerting when it happens. I've had many clients who are super surprised. Not only that it happens, but it makes you question, you know, the past. You know, did we, you know, who are you? What did you believe this whole time? And it can certainly interfere with the plans that you've made and what you do going forward. And so it can be disconcerting to find yourself suddenly dealing with that. So that's what the personality change is. And let's talk about, you know, what are the three times that this typically comes up? The first is typically when the petition is filed. So they may be acting a certain way, and then as soon as the petition is filed with the court, you'll observe a small or large personality change in them. The second one is when the final decree from the court is issued. This is the moment when the court has signed off on everything, and the details and all the terms that you've agreed to in your parenting plan, if you have one, and your financial matters is officially ordered, and your status is officially designated as, you know, divorced or legally separated, but your marriage is officially legally done at that point. That's the point of that can trigger a personality change in someone. And then the last one is when one of you, and it's not always the one going through this, but when one of you gets into your first very serious relationship And I'm almost always talking about a remarriage, not just someone gets a boyfriend or girlfriend or even a serious significant other. I'm talking about a real commitment. You're going to, you know, it's typically like a remarriage. And usually when one of you gets remarried, either you or the other person is suddenly going to have a personality change. Typically, the person who is not getting remarried, I've seen have the reaction. Now, obviously, if there's something significant that has happened between you, such as an affair is discovered or something, then one of you is going to be thrown headlong into the stages of grief and recovery immediately and against your will. And so that can manifest in many ways throughout the whole process and be amplified or influenced or impacted by any of these other three normal areas too. So, you know, suddenly finding out that your partner has had an affair can make you feel a certain way. And then immediately the petition is filed, that can amplify or augment more feelings and have even different feelings when the final decree is issued. So we're going to just basically assume that stuff like that's going on, then you know that there's going to be a personality change typically, because that's just kind of a normal thing if someone is dealing with something like that or you're that person. So that notwithstanding, these are typically the three areas, the three times when I see people having a personality change. And so why does that occur? And what I'm going to say to you is that there could be a million reasons why, but this is not a definitive assessment of all situations, obviously, but typically it has to do with either previously undealt with dysfunction or, where you're at in the level of acceptance through your stages of grief and loss for the marriage. And you can talk about getting divorced for years, and but when the petition is filed, that's a tangible, real, measurable, official step that can cause someone to move from maybe I'm in denial, and that could move them into bargaining or anger or depression. So that's why that one is there. The next one is when the final decree is issued. Since that's the official end of the marriage, that can be also a triggering event to say, well, now it's official, we're divorced, and then you have to deal with that, and maybe you're not ready. And so that can cause some feelings that need to be expressed or dealt with somehow. And then lastly, if you're not really in a good place with your recovery and adjustment with things, seeing the other person get into a very serious relationship can also throw it back in your face that, oh yeah, we're divorced. Oh yeah, they're moving on. Oh yeah, I have feelings about that. And I have a lot of cases where this one comes up. And so that's the times. All right, so we now know what kind of personalities changes can occur and typically when to expect them. So now let's talk about how does this affect you. And so it really is a function of understanding what the real underlying issues are. If someone is just having unprocessed stages of acceptance or loss or grief, whether they're someone may have a personality change because they're trying to protect themselves. They may be operating in survival mode. So, you know, if there's income disparity, let's say, and now they are either on either side, you know, maybe having feelings about their money, and what that money translates to in terms of housing and future opportunities and things, and that can cause a personality change. Person may be dealing with undealt with dysfunction. There could be, and this is very common, this one, previous control dynamics. So usually when someone didn't feel respected or empowered during the marriage, there could be financial imbalance or disparity, or just a general lack of social or relationship intelligence, a lack of appreciation for developing proactive relationship management and co-parenting for, you know, to create the best opportunities based on the synergy of working together. And so depending on why the personality change is going to occur, it could be any of those reasons, and then how it can affect you is that before the divorce, if this is going on, then their mindset and internal goals, commitments, and belief systems and priorities may be covertly informed by these underlying issues that are not visible to you. And they may not even be visible to the person that they're affecting. And so if these underlying things are going to address how you approach problems and opportunities and agreements sharing responsibilities and goals and values going forward, it's going to affect you before the divorce, because this is the time when you are heading into a process believing it's one way and possibly it's another and you haven't detected it. And so that can lead you down, start you down the wrong path of how to prepare for your, you know, your co-parenting or your post-divorce recovery of yourself or helping the kids adjust and recover or whatever. And so before the divorce occurs, these things can get in the way. And if people are, they can also show up in manipulative ways. So, they may start to treat you or behave in ways to get to quietly position things to their benefit, letting you assume things are a certain way so that they can take the benefit of that trust and turn it into an opportunity for themselves. And all that happens before the divorce really gets going. So during the divorce, things can affect you because as you make these agreements together, they may be based on those false assumptions and or solely based on the history, which may not be a true, if it's not an accurate, ethical history. You know, people weren't being authentic in that history. And you're basing your future agreements on that being the truth, that being the true north that you're trying to negotiate with. You may be making agreements that are, you know, flawed. And so during the divorce, these things can be a problem in terms of how you approach your terms that you make with each other. Assumptions about how you're going to take care of your financial obligations, your children, or just working together so as to shift the parenting plan and separation agreement terms to someone's favor. Usually you'll see this manifest as you work through divorce terms as someone trying to leave themselves as much power in the future as possible. So you'll see things like, we don't need to, if you decrease the child support amount and you get into trouble with money, you know, I'm going to help you out. You know, I've got you. We don't need to write that down. Or you may see someone saying, I don't want to get specific about the parenting plan. Just let the kids decide, or you and I will work it out. It's not a big deal. You'll see behaviors, you know, like, you and I always get along with this stuff, so we don't need to have a really rigid, structured plan. It's just best. We'll just do what we've always done and work it out. Another one you'll hear is, we don't want the court telling us what to do or who to be. You and I will figure it out. And all of these things happen to create more autonomy for the other person. So by not being specific in the parenting plan, if that other person decides to do something different in the future, as they may be planning to do already, they are certainly going to have a better chance to do that if there's not something specific written down in the plan that would limit their ability to do that behavior. And so that is how things can affect you during a divorce process. After the divorce, this personality change can affect you. So you've got your plan already done, let's say, and you're living your life and you have certain assumptions about how that's going. And And now you see this sudden change in the other person, either at the final decree or when someone's getting remarried, that throws you for a loop. And now that the orders are done, the marriage is officially dissolved, this other person, or you, either way, right, are now legally free as you possibly can be from the other person, and you can, quote unquote, finally be yourself. So that means you're going to have a departure from what you just agreed to in the mediation, because some people just sort of get through the process so that they can get it over with and then just go, quote unquote, be who they're going to be. And the problem with that is that you developed your plan based on an assumption that it's not playing out to be that way in your actual post-divorce, you know, career with each other. And so now your plan isn't going to be sufficient for your expectations with each other, which can lead to conflict, miscommunication, frustration, and all of this the kids can see. And that can all be, you know, really disconcerting to know that you've got a plan that, you know, what's it worth now? What did we build here? What we built doesn't really reflect the situation. I have a quick client story about this. I had a couple that came in some time ago, and they were pretty agreeable. It seemed to be during the general conversations that she took the lead on most things, and he was very agreeable and said, that's what I think too, and all that. And so it seemed to be, you know, everything seemed to be in order. The testing that I did, you know, in terms of trying to assess if there's any underlying issues, came back fine. You know, there were no red flags, they seemed open and genuine. And they created a very, you know, what I thought was a very nice parenting plan. And then I got a call, you know, a year later, saying that they had real problems. They were having a lot of arguments, and what had happened was that the husband started not being so agreeable. He started having a personality change, and suddenly he was holding her accountable to the specific things in the agreement when she assumed that they would just work together around things. And even if it was his Tuesday night, let's say, and she had something she wanted to do with the kids, then she would take them. And he said, yeah, that's probably fine during the mediation. But then afterwards he said, no, it's my night. I don't have to do what you want anymore. And then she was completely thrown back. She was really shocked and didn't understand what was going on and why he was behaving this way, and really just attributed it to, he has some behavioral problems. And after talking to the both of them, I realized that she had been sort of painting the picture for both of them all along. He was just going along with it. And now that because, you know, to oppose that caused too many problems. She wasn't flexible in her direction of things. And so, you know, it wasn't a bad direction. So he went along with it during the marriage. And so that's why it tested so good during the mediation, was that, you know, he really seemed to be okay with it. But now that they were separating, he's like, I'll make my own decisions now. And she did not understand how she had any responsibility toward that. And that she basically was treating him like a child. And, he wanted to have a different dynamic. And, I was able to quickly suss out after talking to both of them that what had happened was they thought they were in a very tight, collaborative co-parenting relationship. And really that was the wrong parenting style for them. They really don't agree on as much as she thought they did. And he said they did. And really what it is that they have different ideas, and they're really more in kind of a parallel parenting style. So that means that each are going to do their own thing a little bit more, and you just have to accept that with the other person. And she was still trying to exercise her control dynamic over him post-divorce, which was causing him to be more, you know, resistant and rebellious and stuff like that. And so this is how things can pop up and be unexpected. In that case, I talked to both of them, and mostly her. She realized that if that's the way it is, then she needs to let go of this vision of how divorced couples should and could be, and instead accept him for who he really was, and things could be peaceful. And after this came up, I know it sounds a lot like therapy sometimes, this mediation stuff, but when she finally got that that was the dynamic and that she had some responsibility toward this, it wasn't him who had all the problems, she changed her approach to him, and things got a lot better for both of them and thus for the kids. And so this is how things can sneak up on someone even after the divorce, right? So that's just an example of that. Okay, so now we know that it can happen. We know it can cause some problems. And we know that it can happen at, you know, traditionally 3 times. So what do we do about it? What can you do with this information? And I would say there's a few things you could do. This is not a definitive list, but this is sort of a mindset to come into it with. And I would think first, as you're coming into your divorce, have a real honest assessment of your relationship and really, really sort of forget everything you think you know and look at it with fresh eyes and try to confirm your assessment of it instead of just blindly accepting it. This is what my previous client did not do. So has one of you typically been making most of the decisions? You know, that can be a potential for there being a control dynamic that per my recent example here, could be a underlying issue that's going to present itself later. Does one of you seem to require nudging, nagging, or active direction to effectively uphold their part of the marital or family responsibilities? If that dynamic is going on, then you might have a situation where one party may feel sort of more like in a child role in the relationship and the other one in a parent role. And when you get divorced, you're going to see, you know, a change. And so when you replay the past grievances or arguments between the two of you, are there some topics that seem to show up repeatedly? Those can be signs of potential impactors to personality down the road. Has there been some disparity in any aspect of your relationship that disparity hasn't, quote unquote, really, really been pre-negotiated? So one of you making a lot more money than the other one is a good one. Or one of you taking more control over certain topics is another one. Or, you know, just things like that where, and there can be emotional control too, not just financial or parenting, but, you know, one of you has had more impact or governance or let's say handling of the emotional factors in the relationship. That can be another one. And so if there are these things and really sit down and assess, have they really been pre-negotiated? So I'll see a lot of times when there's an income disparity, someone makes most or all the money and the other person doesn't. And then when we get divorced, there are some attitudes, some expectations, some entitlements both ways that lead to a change in personality for sure. And we find out that disparity wasn't really agreed to. You know, someone just decided not to work and it seemed okay during the marriage, but now that we're getting divorced and talking about maintenance and all that, it is clear that they were not on the same page. And now the person who makes more money, for example, is now really, you know, they're really bothered by that and they can start acting out in ways. And it can go both ways, right? So really look at if things have been really pre-negotiated or if they just kind of fell that way. And if there is a disparity, has that been supported and encouraged during the relationship? Or has it been kind of a begrudged reality that someone has just accepted. And they say, I wish you would get out and work more, or I wish you were more involved with the kids, or I wish you weren't working all the time. And, you know, you know it's a problem, but it's never been fixed, addressed or adjusted. You may have one of these underlying issues. So assessing that is really the first part. Really, does it exist? And that's one thing you should do to help assess whether this might be something you're going to be dealing with. Another thing you can do is just very carefully and respectfully, calmly and lovingly, if possible, talk to your partner at the beginning of the process to confirm any concerns, feelings that they have. Are there any unresolved areas that may be there that might make an appearance? How do they feel about the disparities? You know, they always bring up how you never helped out with the house, or you've always brought up that they never help out with the house. And so what you want to do is figure out what potential things are going on with them. If there's any unresolved things or repetitive things that haven't been, that have fallen into dysfunction and haven't been resolved or dealt with, how are they feeling? Do they feel scared? Are they angry? And it really is a one-way activity. You should be learning and listening. This isn't the chance for you to judge them or say, well, you think you got issues. Here's my side of this. And look at this as an opportunity to express your stack of concerns. Only do that if both of you encourage it and you both feel like it's safe and it's acceptable to do so. Then you can have whatever open conversations you want. But basically what you want to do is try to get an assessment by talking to your partner. You know, what things might be there, so you don't blindly walk past them. Another thing you can do is alert your mediator, either doing the pre-mediation disclosures part of the process or as soon as you suspect there's something, and then discuss how to best address that issue with the mediator. Based on what the issue is, based on the severity of it, the mediator may suggest having a private caucus with one or both of you to sort of get into that issue more intimately and assess if that's going to be a factor that needs to be addressed, or if it's just you know, transient feeling that is going to take its due course in a healthy way through the grieving cycles and things like that. If it is something that's going to be a factor, then by proactively addressing it during the negotiations and during the solution building parts of the mediation, you can avoid some of the issues that are going to come up and affect you down the road. So that's there's a lot of tangible, valuable things that can happen there. Another thing you can do to help with this is to anticipate a change to the norm as you expect it. So don't be blind, don't assume, and do it now so you can avoid it later against your will. It's always better to take your medicine and get the truth up front than it is to have to be forced to take your medicine or be forced to deal with something later. It's always better to do it now. And now is the time when you can still do something about that dynamic before you've locked down your agreement and had it ordered by a court and then found yourselves inextricably down certain paths now that are going to be really problematic. So now is the time to figure out you may not be on the same page, as painful as that may be. You want to get to your own acceptance with that as soon as possible so you can create a plan that is based on the reality of your situation instead of based on assumptions that either of you are carrying into the process, or assuming that, you know, the historical patterns of behavior are going to persist. By really dealing with that in an accepting way now, you can transition this opportunity into something that may be one of the most powerful things that either of you have done, by honestly just maybe now, just out of sheer necessity, just accepting the other person. Maybe they're not the best parent, right? Maybe they're not the ideal co-parent. Maybe your dream of having this super awesome co-parenting as friends style and everyone being happy and all that, maybe you're even capable of upholding your part of that, but your partner isn't. You got to let it go. You got to accept your partner for who they are, and remember that the plan that you create is going to be the result of what both of you can accomplish together, not what either one of you can accomplish on your own. Think of it again as like you and your co-parent are in a three-legged race, and getting to the finish line is the point. It's not who gets there first in this game. And the band around your feet that's connecting you is your kid. And so if one of you can run faster than the other, it's not worth breaking that band and sprinting ahead and getting to the finish line and saying, see, I'm a better parent. It doesn't matter. You didn't get there together and you got a broken kid on the field. And so adjusting your expectations to what can we comfortably do together, and then lean into that with everything you've got so you can cross the damn finish line, is the most perfect, ideal, pragmatic, helpful, beneficial thing you can do to each other. If the other person feels accepted, they're going to feel good. They're going to be more open and trusting, feel less judged. You're going to get better results than you are any other way. And then if you have capacity to do other things with your time that you can't accomplish together, you can work on things on your own. There's nothing that stops you from, you know, teaching your kids about emotional intelligence or, you know, exposing them to different values on your own time. You don't have to do it through your co-parent. You can do that on your own. And so by learning this, you can have a much more successful parenting plan because it's based on an honest assessment of your real parenting style. And you're going to have a better result because now it's set up on a realistic system where you can both perform in a, and the results are going to be, you know, what you expect. You're going to expect the outcomes and you're going to be more comforted and trust it more. So that's something you can do. Another thing you can do now to help protect yourself from these personality change moments is when you're nailing down your agreements, be specific and do not rely on assumptions, especially if the other party is actively calling on you to do that. If they're actively calling on you to leave certain commitments out of the agreement, you're going to want to question that behavior and push back. I can't tell you how many times I see parents or parties even for financial matters say, look, you know, I'm going to be struggling. I can't survive if we, you know, do that as much maintenance and spousal maintenance and child support as the system's calling for. If you can give me some breathing room on that, it'll allow me to survive. And then when you have any issues, you know, I'm going to take care of you. You know, I've always done it. I always will. And just help me out here. I hear that one a lot. Or, you know, in the parenting plan, I will hear someone will bring up the topic of future relationships and say, you know, in case either of us gets into a new relationship, I don't think we should introduce the children to that new person for the first 90 days or 6 months. And the other person will say, we don't need that. We're both good people. We don't need an agreement to tell us how to be, you know, good people. Or they'll say, we don't need to make this that rigid. We don't want to get in trouble if one of us slips up a little bit. Or I'll hear, we don't need the courts telling us who to be. The government's already too involved and so forth, so on. And so now these things may or may not be true in their own merits, for sure. However, if you push back and there really shouldn't be any objection, reasonable objection, to documenting common sense commitments to each other. So, you know, don't give the kids a swirly for your discipline and punishment. Okay. Now, if you were to ask me, Hey Tom, as we're doing our parenting plan, I would like us to put in the parenting plan that we won't give the kids a swirly in as a form of discipline, in our parenting plan. I'm going to say, okay, no problem. I will happily commit myself in the parenting plan not to do that because I have no intention of doing that. However, you know, if I have a secret intention to get with someone else as soon as possible and only concern myself with my needs so I'm not restrained by what my ex says or what my children might, you know, how my children might be impacted, I might want to resist committing myself to limiting my behavior in the parenting plan, you know, with regard to new relationships. So, you know, it's these are some things that you want to, if at all possible, be as specific as you can. And if the real issue with not being able to agree to something like the aforementioned, hey, give me a break on the maintenance of the child support issue and I'll help you out. If that really is what it is, maybe they have some volatility in their job and they're really concerned about it. If that is the truth, like if you push back and we vet it out and that's the real concern, there are ways to handle that without a blanket dismissal of any obligations. There's ways to take care of it that are going to be respectful to both parties, both giving, let's say, the other person a reasonable way to reduce the pressure on their finances without the other person having to waive any and all rights to assistance. So, you know, it's worth pushing back and getting to the heart of the matter. That's something you can do now to address these things. Almost everyone I sit down and work with initially, when we talk about specific things that might be problems in the future, I invariably hear, that doesn't apply to us. Like we get along, we're going to be fine. And hey, that's great. I hope that's the case. And as I'm famous for saying, the best place you'll be in is that we'll spend 3 or 4 hours coming up with a great parenting plan and you'll never look at it again because you're working things out and everything's going smoothly. But the worst place we can be in is to not do a good job here. And then in 3 years, something changes. Someone has a personality change, for example, and you open up the agreement and you desperately need it to say something and it doesn't. And that's going to be a very dark day for you. And we can do something about that now by being specific in the plan, by thinking about, you know, making commitments on values, reasonable values. You know, like it's generally a good idea to not introduce the kids to someone right away. Let's say I can, you know, while I may not like the control that makes me feel like, you know, is being placed on me, all that stuff, I generally recognize that as good value. So commit to doing it and then go ahead and do it. Right. That's worth figuring out. That's really good time in mediation to figure it out so that we can deal with the underlying issue very well. Okay. So, and lastly, something you can also do is by knowing when to expect these potential personality changes, either in yourself or your partner, you can avoid being shocked when they occur. Now, when something hits you out of the blue, it can be really disconcerting and throw you into your fight, flight, or freeze mode, your survival mode, which can cause you to be aggressive or defensive. And that can lead to some escalation of things just all by itself, right? The other person's going to, you know, say, hey, I'm getting into a new relationship. And then you're going to get super defensive and upset. And they're going to read that as, oh, I see how it is. Okay. And then they're going to have a reaction. And it gets really out of hand quickly because no one's actually communicating or processing things in on their own side before it's exposed to the other person. And so by being better prepared for these things, you can be more graceful when changes occur so that tensions and frustrations don't haphazardly blossom. You can, by knowing what's coming, it can inform you on proactively discussing strategies in therapy. So let's say someone is having a, let's just say it's you. Let's say you haven't really accepted, you know, or you're not sure. You think you've reached acceptance with a divorce, but maybe not. Your ex-spouse is now talking about they're seeing someone serious. It may be worth a little proactive session in your therapy just to say, can we test where I'm at with that? Are there any underlying issues that, you know, this might bring up? And if it's the other person doing it, you can talk to your therapist if you have one about how to proactively start thinking about and preparing for such an event so that, you know, you and or the kids, if you have children together and are going to be affected by this, aren't, you know, you're not completely helpless in this. You can start to understand things by discussing how people change when they get into relationships. You can discuss the potentiality of a change with your kids, even just so they when they see it, they don't get shocked. It feels more in control to them. So there's a lot of things you can do on the emotional side of it. On the legal side of it, on the, you know, the family co-parenting side of it, this is not a bad time actually to sit down and have a tune-up session with your parenting plan with the mediator. And, you know, what you want to do is maybe come in and say, we've had this parenting plan for, let's say, a number of years, hopefully at this point, and we need, there's a few things that might be tuned up. And with this big change coming in your life, you know, it's remarriage, it might be a really good time to sit down and make sure we're well positioned for success heading into this. And that this would be a good time for us to sit down with the mediator and discuss what are the dynamics of a new, you know, someone joining the extended family, you know, new husband, wife, something like that, joining the family. How does that impact our communication, the parenting plan, financial matters, you know, all these issues? Because a lot of people, when this event happens, there are a lot of assumptions that people bring into the process that aren't actually true and cause conflict. A lot of times you'll see, especially if in the dynamic between one parent one partner was feeling like the other one was more of a child, let's say, and they weren't being responsible enough and they had to nag them constantly. When you get into a co-parenting situation and that parent who was feeling like a child, they get remarried, suddenly their spouse now becomes super active in the co-parenting conversations. They start driving the kids to school. They start discussing vacations and holidays with you instead of the actual co-parent. And, you know, so situations like that can occur, which can create some real confusion as well. And I see that one a lot. So we want to make sure that we take advantage of this opportunity to say, as you head into this, here's a reminder of where the authority and the obligations lie with your parenting plan. Here's how to best integrate new potential step parents or extended family, because they may have their own kids with a divorce schedule, and maybe they want to sync that up so the kids can be together. Like, by proactively talking about these things up front, they can be more graceful and solutions can be improved for everybody. And so that's something that, that's another thing you can do to help minimize the impact of this phenomenon. Okay. So now hopefully you have a little bit better understanding of how a personality can inexplicably change, you know, that it might happen when the petition is filed, when the final decree is issued, or when one of you gets remarried. Basically, anything that will be challenging a person's status in their stages of grief or recovery from the relationship can cause those feelings to suddenly surface. And by expecting it, you have the opportunity to create a more sophisticated agreement, a more mature, responsible understanding and assessment of the situation, and better assess your co-parenting style, how to best implement that into a more successful parenting plan. Remember the three-legged race. And also help support the recovery and adjustment for both of you and the children if you have them together. So hopefully that is something that is going to help demystify this weird phenomenon that I see happen all the time. All right. In our next episode, I'm going to touch on a few things that children of divorce may be negatively affected by with the Christmas holiday, and some ways to help the holiday to stay running smoothly for everyone. This has been Tom Davis. Thank you for joining me today. Remember to protect every accomplishment you make together, and that setbacks are just wins in the making. Stay positive. The Pro Se Divorce Podcast is a production of Family Synergy Mediation. The information in these podcasts are opinions only and should not be considered legal advice. Visit myfamilymediation.com to learn more.